Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, episode 46, recorded December 13th, 2010, THX video certification. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off the lifetime of your new account, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code HTG. Because THX does video. And my guest today is the man of the hour in regards to THX video, Kevin Wines.
How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing real well.
Good. We're going to get the show started here in just a second. Burke, how are we doing? Are we about ready to go?
I'm ready.
Oh. How very nice. Now I've got, Kevin, just FYI, before we start, I've got two ads to read today, which is kind of nice. So a couple of times during our conversation, I'm going to interrupt and read these ads. So that's just for your information.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. If Burke is ready, then I will start.
Go ahead.
Here we go. 3, 2. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here with UltimateAVMag.com and HomeTheaterMag.com. Today's guest geek of the week is Kevin Wines, Image Technology Director at THX. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, I'm sure glad to have you on because, as we've already seen in the chat room, some people don't realize that THX has a lot to do with video. So we're going to get into that in a moment. Before I do that, though, I want to say that those are who are tuned into the live video stream at live.twit.tv or the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Kevin, and I will pass on as many as I can. So let's start with that. Most people, when they think of THX, they think audio. And yet THX, I think, has been involved in video almost as long as it's been around. Isn't that true?
Well, yeah. In fact, you can go all the way back to the genesis of THX, 1983. It actually did start with audio when Episode 6 of Star Wars was being finished. Mr. Lucas decided that he wasn't satisfied with the way his customers were hearing the sound compared to what he could get in his own facility. So that was where the Tom Holman crossover, the THX crossover, and the whole concept of certifying theaters for sound came into being. Mm-hmm. It has evolved. It has evolved. And our display program, as we're here to discuss, actually didn't start until 2006.
So it was a little bit after the fact then, after the initial audio work that was done.
Yeah, and in between, if you're familiar with the what they call the Theater Tap program, as well as another one, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it,
where all right.
Kodak and THX together about a decade ago started a program where they went in and they verified that the light levels were good in a theater, and there was an excessive jump and weave, you know, standard film things. Now it has evolved to the point, and where consumer electronics has evolved to the point where the performance has gone so high and the expectations actually have been elevated that there's really, THX saw value in going out and doing this level of certification testing.
Now, at first that was in commercial cinemas, right?
Yeah, it started the whole evolution has been cinemas to home electronics.
And now we're into as you say, home electronics, which have such high performance, or potentially such high performance, I should say, that more recently, THX, now THX for a long time has been certifying audio products, right? You've got THX Select and Ultra, and those have to do with different sizes of rooms and audio receivers, audio video receivers, but certifying the audio quality and the audio performance has been going on for a while. But now, more recently, THX has started certifying the performance of video products, specifically flat panel TVs.
Yeah, that's right. The audio, the home audio performance testing has been going on for several years longer than with the video. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason THX made the conscious decision not to jump into the video world prior to 2006 is because they're really, before the days of things like HDMI, where it's really a full digital signal, it was really, there was no easy way, if you will, to get a handle on the way the analog signals were being produced out of each and every device. So there really wasn't good value to be brought to it by a THX program. Now that, the design of the carrier of the signal, if the HDMI type signal, is so well known and so easily quantified, and the performance of the panels themselves has come such a long way in the last few years, that was why THX made the decision to jump in when they did.
Mm-hmm. And I believe the first flat panels that were certified were from LG. Is that correct?
Well, that's the first 3D. Actually, the very first visual thing that got certified by THX was a Runco projector back in 06.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Huh. And I think you've also done certification on the newest TiVo, the TiVo Premier, correct?
Yeah, we've certified the TiVo box. And in fact, it's got a set of our, what we call our optimizer test patterns built into it.
I want to get into that a little later, but that's a really important point that I want to make sure we make.
Okay.
But before we do, I wanted to just get a little bit of a sense of what's involved in consumer display certification. And I know we have a couple of pictures. I know we have a couple of pictures from the THX certification lab up there in Northern California, which we can display as you're describing sort of. Let's start with 2D, because I know we're going to talk about 3D as well. So if Burke can get the those photos up on the screen, we can talk about, you can tell us about the certification process. And
right.
Why don't you go ahead and start while we're waiting for those pictures?
Okay. Well, our partners, which is our folks that work with us, like LG, Panasonic, Runco, JVC, on and on, We release our specifications for any given year as far in advance as practical, usually 4 to 6 months. They're actually building their prototypes with these specs in mind.
Okay. Here's one picture of somebody taking some brightness levels, it looks like.
Yeah, they're checking grayscale on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So they build our specs, basically, which, you know, there's no huge amounts of magic in that. A fair portion of it is you know, good old SMPTE, ITU, EBU type standards for high definition video. So they build to the specs. Usually, the first unit we get to test is a prototype, not a finished, fully finished product. They generally, well, actually, almost always send an engineer with the prototype to our labs in San Rafael, where we've got several testing spaces that we use. One is a completely black room where we do some of our testing. One is a room that's very gray, very close to video white level gray, and we control the lighting level in there. And we do a very long series of tests. We have two very large sections. One is all about the picture, and the other is about signal processing, where we look for scaling noise, high-frequency noise, proper cadence detection, proper deinterlacing, things of that mm-hmm. nature.
What are we looking at here?
Let's see. That is in our video lab. And Peter looks like he's That is a multi-pattern. It could be used for, you notice the squares in it, that could be used to make sure that the image is properly centered, properly linear. You also have the, across the bottom there is the frequency response band. Up at the top, you see a grayscale and a color band. So that's a multi-pattern that we use for, actually, you could tell many things at once with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost refer to a pattern like that as a quick glance pattern, because you can
you could
tell a multitude of things just by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually one of the types you'd use if you have a suspicion of a problem and you want to know where to go troubleshoot.
Right, of course.
Right. So back to the process of certification. Mm-hmm. So the engineer from the manufacturer is in our test lab with our engineers. They run it through its paces. Any areas where it out of the box shows deficiencies, if you will, or hasn't quite been tuned up to where we'd like to see it, there'll be an iteration or maybe several iterations of going back to the factory and getting a new firmware update. And then they'll download it. Once we get it to the point where it's passing all our criteria, the firmware is locked, and then it goes. That's when it goes back and goes into mass production.
And when a TV gets to that point and goes into mass production, then one of the picture modes that you find when you buy such a TV and take it home, take it out of the box, look in the menu. Hopefully, more and more people who listen to me are looking in the menu, if for nothing else than just simple curiosity, because there are ways to make the TV look better than it does straight out of the box. And one of those ways is to go into the menu, and in the picture mode control, there are several selections, one of which is THX mode.
Correct. It's actually defined as THX Cinema. It is optimized for the movie-watching experience or, shall we say, the higher-produced television shows. The TV dramas look very good on it as well, like mm-hmm. the CSI series or the Law & Order series, the Human Target, one of my new favorites,
mm-hmm.
because they're high production value very often, even to this day. If they're not shot on film, they're at least shot on the digital cinematography cameras, so... a lot of good grayscale, a lot of good, full gamut there to be captured and to get all the way to the consumer's home, we hope.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a THX Cinema mode. There's in some manufacturers' displays, there's called a THX Brightroom mode, where it's optimized to work better in a daylight environment or an environment where you have more room lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, there's THX 3D mode.
Right. And we're going to get talking about 3D in just a moment. Before we continue, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. Squarespace.com has an easy-to-use user interface for creating and managing your website, and it's optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. There are hundreds of design templates to choose from, and you can customize any of them to fit your needs. The all-inclusive service has several modules to build your website, a blog module, for example, and it interfaces with WordPress, Blogger, Movable Type, and Typepad. You can build a forum or forms. You can include a Flickr photo display. There's a Twitter widget to display your tweets on the website, Google Maps, and more. Website tracking and built-in search engine optimizer give you permission access handling, cloud architecture for speed and site stability, an innovative drag-and-drop AJAX interface, even an iPhone app so you can log into your website and update it on the go. Use Squarespace for all your website needs. Build it, host it, update it anytime. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com and sign up for a free account. There's no credit card needed. Just try it out to build your own website. Then, if you decide to purchase, use the offer code HTG and get 10% off the lifetime of your new account. That's squarespace.com and use the offer code HTG. So getting back to Kevin Wines, the image technology director at THX, we were talking about the THX mode and how when you select that in a TV, it gives you the optimum performance from primarily movies and high production value TV shows. But I wanted to ask you about that because in my experience reviewing THX certified TVs, there is some variability between the THX mode in one TV and the THX mode in another TV. And there's, while they are quite accurate, and when I say accurate, I mean the grayscale, when measured, is pretty accurate. The colorimetry, where the red, green, and blue color points are fairly accurate. But they're generally not perfect. And when you measure one TV against another, they're not always the same. How do you account for this variability?
Well, there's a couple of things. One of them, of course, is there's always some variability in mass-produced units. The other one is we have actually have different maximum or what I would say spec brightness levels for the different technologies. So our expectation is a projector would be one brightness level, an LCD panel would be something else, and a plasma panel would be at a third level because we understand the expectations that you can have of the different technologies. So sometimes you'll find variances in that.
For example, LCDs will generally be brighter than plasmas.
Absolutely, but at the same time, they probably won't have as deep a black.
Correct.
Although the ones that have the zone lighting in the LED backlight are getting awfully close. Yeah, they're getting really close.
So do you have different target specs for plasmas versus LCDs then in terms of black level and peak white level?
LED and projector all have different specs.
Okay.
Because you have to work to the maximum capabilities of the technology.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say any other variabilities, like I say, you know, large batches of the glass itself sometimes comes from different manufacturers. What we go for is we go for closest to calibrated as possible out of the box. When you hit THX Cinema mode, you can count on it having a certain window of behavior characteristics. Mm-hmm. And any one of the panels, if you get a THX certified installer to come in and really work the magic hard, you'll find that you'll get it amazingly close to absolute spec on the grayscale.
Now that brings up another question I had for you, which is some TVs, when you select the THX cinema mode or picture mode, it totally locks out the controls, all the picture controls. You can't adjust anything. In other examples, you can adjust certain things, maybe the basic picture controls. And in yet other examples, you can adjust everything. Is there any rhyme or reason to that? I know that THX can't control what the manufacturers do in that sense, but is there any rhyme or reason to that?
Well, we recommend that they lock out the controls. Now, there's
all controls.
Well, there's actually not all controls. The basic controls, meaning brightness, contrast, color, and tint. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily press for those to be locked out, but we certainly recommend. We don't demand that the advanced user controls get locked out, not because we're trying to deny anybody anything. It's just that those are a really good place to go in to get yourself into serious trouble.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, as you said, you get a THX certified installer in there and they select the THX mode and they find that it's not that they could, in fact, tweak it to be a little better because of the variability issue. But they can't do it in that THX mode. They would have to, I guess, go into the expert mode or some other mode that would allow them access to the grayscale controls and all those deeper controls.
Well, there are technician lockout codes.
You and I will have to talk after the show then to get those codes.
Let me put it this way. I have an LG panel in my living room, and there is no control I can't get to.
But of course, you have those technician lockout codes.
There's certain aspects of our NDAs that allow us to share, and certain aspects that don't.
Okay, well, you and I will talk about that after the show.
I could certainly give you pointers to the right people who would be willing to give you the codes. How's that?
Okay, that I will accept. Very good.
Fair enough.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about 3D because. Okay. That's a huge issue right now, of course. And THX has just earlier this year, I think, started to certify 3D TVs.
That's true. LG PX950 was the first.
That's it a happened.
Yeah, it's a plasma. And that happened in then very near the end of summer, not many weeks before Cydia.
Mm.
And that is a whole. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and I heard you give an address at the LG press conference there, which was very impressive. And that is a whole other can of worms. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the difference between 2D certification and 3D certification?
Okay. Well, one of the things, of course, you have to bear in mind is all of the things for 2D certification stick within 3D, meaning, well, let me actually back up further than that. The THX policy now is, if a unit is 3D capable, we don't 2D only certify it anymore. We ask that we 2D certify it, and assuming it passes that, we then go on and we do the 3D testing. The 3D testing, in a lot of cases, is essentially 2D times 2. We expect that it, through the system, in 3D mode, measuring through the glasses, very important, that we will continue to measure Rec. 709 color points, Rec. 709 white point, a uniform grayscale, you know, the black and white levels being in their proper position. Light levels are lower, just like they are in cinema, because there's a lot going on there that keeps you from seeing as much light as you do in 2D.
Well, and primarily, isn't that the glasses? I mean, with active shutter glasses, you're losing, I've heard, up to 70% of the light that's coming off the screen by the time it gets into your eye.
Very true. And that's also true in the cinema.
Exactly.
In fact, we derived our ratios of what do we expect for maximum for 100% wide in 2D versus what do we expect for 100% wide in 3D. That ratio, and you're right, it's very close to, closer to 75% loss, is similar. So if we say THX Cinema Mode 2D is 35-foot Lamberts, then THX Cinema Mode 2D is going to fall somewhere in the range of 10 to 12-foot Lamberts. And that's our expectation. And the good news is they master the content with that in mind. They know that they're going to displays with a lot lower brightness, both in cinema and in home. So the content is made to look its best on these lower light levels.
Do you know anything about light levels in 3D cinemas? For example, IMAX actually uses two projectors in 3D. So they get a fair amount of light coming off the screen that results in a fair amount of light coming into the eye. But in most other 3D theaters, Real D, Disney 3D, and so on, there's only one projector. And I've heard tales of, I mean, with 2D, the amount of light coming off the screen is ideally specified at 14 or 16 foot Lamberts, which means that in a 3D mode, you're getting, you know, 4 or 5 foot Lamberts.
That's true.
Which is really low. Are those numbers correct? Have I heard correctly?
You have heard correctly. The interesting thing is the spec for the 2D picture is 14 foot Lamberts maximum white in a digital cinema. There is no spec for 3D yet. There's at this point accepted common practices. They master, for digital cinema, they master at 4, sometimes 4.5. Interesting, I've heard different things about the IMAX situation because they actually they measure around 6-foot Lamberts.
Really? Even with two projectors?
Uh-huh. Oh, it's significant light loss. But they also, you know, one of the things you've got to be careful of, and it's proper in the industry, and it also matches the THX practices very significantly, and that is you still have to have symmetry between what they mastered on, what the director saw and approved, and what you do on the playback side for the consumer. Simply adding light and assuming that a master created at low light levels is going to work is a mistake. What'll happen is whites will start to look blasted out, you know, well, actually all high luminance values will simply become clipped white. Blue skies become white. That's one of the key elements to know when you're clipping right away. The black levels begin to look lifted after a certain point. The fact that it was created for this smaller dynamic range becomes horrifically apparent if you give it too much light. So there actually was a test done, a demonstration, if you will, a year ago March by a group called the ISDCF, which is the Inter-Society Digital Cinema Forum, where we took various 3D footages, and we remastered them at 4, 6, 10, and 14-foot Lamberts, and then we went into one cinema here locally, and we showed them at all those different levels with the support of Real D, with the support of Christie, and a whole bunch of other people. Modern Video Film did the remastering for us.
Was that a single projector system?
Single projector. It was using the thing called the XL panel, which they call the light doubler for Real D. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get significantly more than 16-foot Lamberts on a 35-foot wide screen in a cinema. It is doable.
And that's in 3D? That's through the glasses?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So what was the result? What did you see?
Well, what we saw was very interesting variations. And we learned what we kind of already knew anyway, and that is if you took something mastered for 4-foot Lamberts, which is what happens for all cinema right now, and that tends to stick to what they do for the home video, you take that and you start pumping it up above about 6-foot Lamberts, it looks really bad.
Wow.
It looks washed out. The whites aren't where they belong anymore. The blacks aren't where they belong anymore. The colors start to desaturate. It's really ugly, frankly. and that was the general consensus. We had a lot of people from the studios, post-production, even a lot of these manufacturers here watching it. Even the DP who did U2 3D was there. The folks from IMAX were there. And so we've had, you know, this was a real Hollywood community activity. And we concluded that something, as the technology gets better, as more and more of the cinemas get capable of 6, 8, or 10-foot Lamberts, the studios and the people doing this mastering have to really keep an eye out for that and start to ease up the light levels they use as they're mastering 3D for the cinema and then ultimately for the home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the feedback we give as well, not just to our manufacturers, but you know, to folks in the community at large, is they sort of, they'll keep an eye on what we're doing. And is our specs creep up as the capabilities of the technologies creep up. So when it comes to a point that people are mastering, because they actually, for home masters, they actually use consumer units now as much as anything else. So they're watching what we do, what the manufacturers do, as they learn that sort of the general practice is moving upward, then the practices for the mastering move upward as well. And once we hit a point where everybody's satisfied, they'll nail a spec through the professional community.
Mm-hmm. We got a question in the chat room from Ken Crayley, who asks, what's the major difference between 3D in the theater and 3D at home?
Well, major difference as well, a lot of them. I'd say the major difference is how much of your field of view is being consumed, and the fact that in some ways, and this is not to disparage home theater, in some ways it's actually easier to watch 3D in a cinema. And this actually a lot of this is outlined on our webpage. We have recommended sort of home theater setups, and we've created some spots now for our best recommendations for 3D, because it does change. The big thing in the cinema is that you're filling your field of view upwards of 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
In the home, we recommend 36 to 50 degrees because, you know, the screen is smaller, your viewing distance relative to the screen width is longer, just because that's the way living rooms are.
Now, is that 36 to 50 degrees for 3D or for 2D?
For 3D. Actually recommend you get a little closer for 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to fill the field of view best you can, because you want to be really immersed in the experience and not be distracted by the dog running by or this light that's over here to your left that shouldn't be there. You don't want your eyes drawn to the bezel of the screen, basically. Anything that calls attention to the screen surface itself And your mind stops being fooled into believing it's seeing real depth.
Yeah. The other issue about that I've been concerned about is when you have a smaller screen and you're watching through these glasses, you see the sort of simulated or synthesized 3D, what's really more accurately called stereoscopic imagery. But then around it, if you can see anything in your room at all, that is real 3D. That is, you know, reality. And if you can see that in your peripheral vision, it causes something of a cognitive dissonance, if you will. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. That's why one of those things on our webpage that says this is what we recommend is that really cool thing a lot of installers do where they'll put a light behind the screen because it looks cool.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't work for 3D. You got to kill that light because as soon as your brain knows there's a solid object some given distance near or behind the screen surface, all of the stereoscopic 3D is no longer believed by your mind because your eye focus changes. As soon as your eye focus changes, it can no longer perceive that 3D.
Now, the one technical reason and a good reason for having that light behind the screen, which is, if you do it correctly, is called a bias light, is more important with CRTs, I think, and direct view TVs, where you need to bias the dynamic range of your eye so that it's in the same dynamic range as what's being produced on the screen. So you're saying that that's not that while that's a good idea with 2D, if you do it correctly, make the light the right intensity and the right color of white, it's still not a good idea to do with 3D because it will draw attention to the actual objects in the room.
Correct. In fact, in our home, all of the lights that we have on while we're watching television at all, 3D included, are behind us.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Nothing calls our attention to any of the solid objects in the room around the display. And so you just started with the question, what's the difference between cinema and home? Well, in a cinema, you're in a totally light-controlled environment. There's this beautifully black frame around the image.
And the image is huge.
It fills your field of view much, much more. It's huge. It's much easier to be immersed. And there's one more. For most of the audience, and I mean nearly everybody but the first couple of rows, your eyes are already at infinity focus. Human eyes go to infinity focus at about 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, which is where most of the audience will be, it's easy for your mind to decouple focus and what they call vergence, which is where your eyes decide what they're converging on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your mind can decouple that when your eyes are at an infinity focus. When you're at your home and you're 8 or 10 feet away, your eyes are constantly trying to change focus while they're watching the 3D. And they really aren't changing focus because they're always focused on the screen surface.
Right, which is some fixed distance away.
Right. So in a cinema, it's already beyond infinity, so that part of the mechanism in your body relaxes and doesn't work.
Ah, I didn't realize that before. That's very good.
Yeah, so go ahead.
I was going to say another reason to prefer 3D in the cinema over the home, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm torn on that because I've actually enjoyed the 3D in my unit at home just as well as in the cinema. But the truth is, the environment is much more controlled in a cinema.
Mm-hmm. Now, those of us who have a light-controlled room, such as the one you see behind me, this room is painted a very dark Munsell gray, which is a hueless gray. And when you turn the lights out in here, it's black. It's a black hole. But there aren't very many people, at least whose spouses, would accept that.
No, that's true. I'm one of the fortunate ones where my wife is just as into gadgets as I am. So,
lucky you.
Well, she's still complaining because I haven't gotten a new set of speakers to hang around the screen yet. So that's a good thing.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. Absolutely.
But you know what? If you even just sort of experiment with moving some lights around, take a torchiere lamp that doesn't have a glass shade, that's got the opaque shade, put it behind you. Let it shine, let it create a light level in the room, and then you turn around and look at your TV. you realize you don't really need that light behind it anymore. Your eyes properly adjust, and it looks really rich, really bright.
Mm. Now, of course, you don't want that torchere or whatever the light is in a position where it will reflect off of the shiny surface of the screen, which is more of a problem with plasmas and some LCDs, but other LCDs have a matte screen, so it's not so big a problem. But you don't, you want to put it sort of out of the reflective angle where you'll see its reflection in the screen where from where you're sitting.
It's all very tricky to get all this laid out so that it's good, you know, and everybody's got compromises. We have a big picture window next to our screen that we don't like the idea of covering because we've got a view across the valley, but we recognize that if we're going to watch 3D, at least in the daytime, we've got to do it. We do the torchere thing, and if I get enough off axis of the television, yes, I do see the reflection of it. So you can only build your room so many ways, but we do lay out our best recommended practice so that you can enjoy the experience either in 2D or 3D.
And I think we do have the website pulled up here or the page that shows the recommended practices. I saw it there briefly. Perhaps we can get it back here before too very long. There it is.
Okay, now that's the sound stuff. There should be some pictures that show a plan view that gives you field of view on the television and field of view around the viewer, kind of in a blue and white.
Okay, well, I'm sure Burke will work on pulling that up.
Okay.
And while he's getting that, let me, actually, we have one question from the chat room that came in early, and I haven't had a chance to ask it before now, which is, it's related to this question. Does THX certify cables, video cables in particular, as this question asks?
A bit. We actually, so many people have gotten so good at it that we almost don't see the need anymore. As long as you can even get really high-quality ones at Radio Shack. The main thing with HDMI, though, when you talk about video cables, is you have to look for high bandwidth, and you have to look for the HDMI 1.4a support, which also gives you it gives you the Ethernet connection in there, and it also gives you the ability to, say, bounce back your audio. So if you're feeding off a cable box to your television, you can actually use the HDMI to bounce the audio back to your receiver if you want to. So the main thing is just look for the ones that are built for high speed, high performance, conforms to HDMI 1.4a, and you can pretty well count on it working.
Yeah. HDMI cables, I've always said, as long as they're SimPlay certified, which they meet some sort of very minimum requirement to pass a certain bandwidth, as you say, you should be fine, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to get into a couple of other topics here. But before we do, I'd like to thank another sponsor for this episode, Ford and voice-activated sync. You know, there's all this stuff these days about texting while driving and talking on your cell phone while driving, a lot of new laws in effect. Listening to music, listening to podcasts. I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast in their car or audiobooks, for example. And this all causes a problem in the car. And you have to take your eyes off the road sometimes to deal with this stuff. And so how do you deal with that? How do you avoid that? Because certainly we don't want to get into any accidents. This is where Sync can help. Voice-activated Ford Sync gives you true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Sync is available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles, and it listens to your voice, so you can make calls on most Bluetooth-enabled mobile phones, get turn-by-turn directions, real-time traffic alerts, even weather. And if you're ever in an accident and your airbag deploys, Sync automatically calls 911. Of course, you'll probably need it less for that if you use Sync, because you're not taking your eyes off the road. But then again, there's, who knows, whatever those other drivers out there who are texting, you might need it for that. Other features offered by Sync include music and podcast search on most MP3 media players, personalized traffic alerts. Sync knows your route and sends you traffic alerts. Sync even will reroute you with turn-by-turn directions in case of traffic jams. There are also audible text messages. Sync helps you keep your eyes on the road and hands on the wheel. It's standard on some Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury models and optional in others. So be sure to check it out. And here's a really exciting contest from Ford. It's your chance to win a trip to Madrid, Spain, for you and a friend to test drive the all-new Focus coming out in early 2011. And there's also a donation from Ford of $10,000 to a charitable cause of your choice. This is a huge prize. To enter to win, submit a video now through December 31st, don't have long, saying what charitable cause you would support and why. If you're selected, Ford will donate $10,000 to that cause, up to a total of $500,000. And they will send you and a friend on a free trip to Madrid for a test drive at Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology. Gee, I'd love to win that. I probably can't, though. To learn more, submit a video entry. Go to twitfordfocus.com. What charitable cause would you like to support? Tell Ford in a short video up to 2 minutes in length. Upload your video now through September 31st, available to Twit audience members worldwide. That URL again is twitfordfocus.com, and be sure to mention Twit. So, Kevin Wines, we were talking about 3D, and I know that you have a little bit of a problem with the rush to 3D that we are now experiencing with so little content available. And I have to say I have the same problem. Manufacturers have been rolling out 3D TVs like popcorn, and yet there aren't that many things available, either through broadcast or on Blu-ray. I think we have less than 40 3D titles available as of the end of this year.
Yeah, true statement. And part of that is I guess the marketing going on. You've seen the bundles starting to come out for the holiday where there's a disc and a player and a panel and you buy it all together and life's grand.
That's a really bad problem. Pardon me for interrupting, but that's a really bad problem in my opinion, to have these exclusive bundles where you can only get Avatar in 3D when you buy a Panasonic TV, for example, or the Shrek series in 3D if you buy a Samsung 3D panel. I think these manufacturers are shooting themselves in the foot. They need to make all these titles universally available to everyone, don't you think?
Well, and of course they will. It's not like anyone who doesn't buy a Panasonic won't eventually be able to get Avatar in 3D.
Yeah,
they just won't get it until spring.
Yeah.
If they
want the whole 3D thing to come to be a success, I would think they would want as much content available to as many people as possible.
Well, yeah, right, and I think if you track back into history, maybe half a year or 9 months when they made these decisions, I think they thought people weren't buying 3D TVs fast enough. And I think they wanted some way to say, well, we can give them incentive by taking these really desirable titles and making them only available through buying a set. Then we'll get more sets on the market, more Blu-ray players that support 3D on the market. And I think they found out that flipped over on them because people started buying the TV sets. 3D is a $200 or $300 up. So if you want to buy a good 2D picture, 3D happens to be coming along for the ride. Why not? That's what most people are doing. Mm. And then suddenly they go to the Blu-ray rack and they realize they can get a couple of titles. I think it was a business decision where the market got ahead of them. And, yeah, you know, they're going to catch up. I think by the post-Christmas rush, you know, the floodgates will open and all the people who got the new Blu-ray player for Christmas will be satisfied that, you know, they now have a reason to go spend the money on the glasses.
And that's another issue I have with the whole rollout of 3D is that the glasses that you get with a Samsung 3D TV, for example, won't work with a Panasonic 3D TV and vice versa. They're mutually incompatible, which is another shot in the foot, if you ask me.
Well, again, I think that that is a piece of the puzzle of what I call the rush to 3D. Mm. Under that umbrella is about five topics, really. This one, the good news is there are folks out there, including manufacturers, that are participating in the consumer electronics world to figure out what universally compatible glasses means. The side note to that, though, and this is part of what we've learned during our certification program, is in order to get the light levels out that you need, the panel manufacturers do actually a remarkably good job. But when you turn it into 3D mode and you look at it without the glasses on, you realize they've driven up the contrast, they've driven up the brightness, they've driven up the saturation. And it's done in a way for two purposes. One is to get enough light to your eye. The other is to start to impose corrections for the tint that's on the glasses that they selected to go with their panel.
And that tint, so, by the way, is different from one manufacturer to another as well.
Thereby hangs the challenge. And they know they made this challenge, and they know they've got to resolve it. And there's a lot of talk in some standards bodies about it. That's one, by the way, we're back in the background participating in this as well through the 3D at Home Consortium, through Consumer Electronics Association, even SMPTE. We're watching all of these different worlds, and we're kind of keeping an eye on what's going on, because the push is going to be there to make compatible, or for want of a better phrase, universal 3D glasses. And part of the challenge isn't just that my TV will make your shutter glasses work properly as far as opening and closing. There's this other whole issue of color correction.
Mm-hmm. A couple of companies are trying to do universal shutter glasses, Xpand being one and Monster being another. Have you looked at either of those?
We have, and I can't talk about it, but yeah, we have.
You can tell me, but you'd have to kill me.
Yeah, and Real D's out there, too. They're going to do their thing as well.
Ah, I thought Real D was mostly passive. Do they do active as well?
They bought the company called Crystallize a few years ago.
Ah, well, there you go.
Yeah. So, and remember, the technology in their panel they use in the cinema in front of the projector, at its core, is the same kind of technology that's used in the lenses of the shutter glasses.
Correct. That is correct.
Right.
We got a question in the chat room. Virgil asks, what happens if you have a 3D TV that's 152 inches? He's talking about the Panasonic, that monster Panasonic plasma. I don't think they've done 3D on that one yet. I know they did on the 103.
Yeah.
But this gets back to the whole issue of field of view. And,
right.
You know, ideally in the home, to get that field of view that you get in the cinema, you'd want a 3D projector. And we haven't really talked about that yet. And I wanted to know if you've done any certifications of 3D projectors yet, because we're starting to see those become available. But the 152 or even the 103-inch plasma would serve the same purpose. Have you guys done anything with projectors yet in 3D?
Yeah, they did their press release a couple weeks ago. JVC was the first projector.
Ah, was it the RS-40? 60?
I believe it was the 60.
Yeah, that's their higher-end one.
Yeah,
we're really looking forward to seeing that and doing a review, and clearly you guys have already done the certification, so it has met the standards that you have set for 3D projectors.
Yes.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of 3D, I've always maintained that 3D displays for the home. Now we're talking. Actually probably make among the best 2D displays if you watch them in 2D and set the brightness and contrast and so on appropriately. So, for example, selecting THX 2D mode. Because typically the 3D displays are among the best or the highest quality premium panels, in the case of flat panels, so that when they display 2D material in 2D, they look better than most of the other sets in the line. Have you found this to be true?
Well, I think take the logic and turn it a little bit on its head there. They're starting with their higher end displays to add 3D. And one of the reasons why is most is actually technical as much as, you know, consumer oriented, and that is the fact that 3D requires remarkably fast refresh.
True enough.
And some very sophisticated timing, because I don't know if all the listeners know it, but it's not just flashing left and right eyes. It's flashing the left eye, then a little black, then the right eye, then a little black, then the left eye, then a little black. Meanwhile, it's driving an 8-bit code to the glasses to say, open your left eye, close your left eye, open your right eye, close your right eye, open your left eye. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, so, no kidding.
You're right. So the signal processing and the technology purchased to drive the panel and such, you know, are inherently higher end in the more expensive sets and inherently more adaptable to these new demands. So I think that's why you're seeing it in those first.
Gotcha. Well, we're almost out of time. I do have one other question not related to 3D, which is a THX optimizer. You mentioned that at the top of the show, and I wanted to make sure we got a few moments on that. I've been very, very pleased with it, particularly when it's implemented in a set-top box like the TiVo Premier, because it's the only way that you can really set up your TV controls properly for broadcast material. Normally, all we can do is set those controls for discs, for disc players, Blu-ray, DVD, with a setup disc like Joe Kane's or Spears and Munsell or something like that. So I want to, first of all, applaud THX for putting it in a set-top box. And I want to ask, is it coming out in any other set-top boxes anytime soon?
Well, again, that's one of those things I'm not allowed to talk about till it happens. But I will say, if you remember, you know, back in the day when there was that now obsolete technology called DVD, they you found discs with optimizer on it. And I'll now say, look to the future. And you may find that again soon.
Are there any discs, any Blu-rays with THX optimizer on them?
Only one where they put the two together from two different sources and it doesn't work, and I don't want to talk about it.
That was out of
our control.
You actually preempted my question, because I had heard a rumor that the THX optimizer on one Blu-ray or another, I didn't know which one, was in fact incorrect. And you've just verified that, but you're not going to tell me which one, and that's okay.
No. And that was one of those things where it sort of happened a little more out of our field of view than it should have, and it wasn't really properly prepared. And so we've had to go back and sort of have a chat with the folks that put that all together and sort of... Sometimes it's very forensic in nature, where you go back where there's a mistake like that, and you got to work your way backwards to find out where it occurred. Partly because the post process is remarkably more complex than a lot of folks realize.
You mean the post production of something like THX Optimizer content?
Well, of the content of any sort, and it goes through huge iterations. In fact, before I came on today with you, I was in a situation where we're realizing that to make Optimizer or anything like it really work properly in the world of mastering Blu-rays, you have to start up recognizing that the workflow is up to 16-bit individual data, 16-bit color depth. Individual data files is now the starting point of all movies and video you see. Even if it's been on film, it got to this data point while they bring it into the digital world. That has to find its way to 12 bits for digital cinema, 10 bits for an HD master that then goes through another sausage grinder to get to what you get on your Blu-ray. Which is 8-bit. And any one of those, and there's a whole bunch of sub-steps in between there. And any one of those steps is an opportunity to harm the image. Is the best way to put it. And so what we're looking toward now is, how do we create an optimizer that assists once they've created that HD master in the 10-bit world, and it still has to go through the sausage grinder to get to 8-bit 420 compressed Blu-ray. There's a lot of differing techniques out there. We created our new version of our test pattern only disc that we were giving away to our students at CEDIA and such. It's going to get even broader distribution. But it allows you to actually, you can put it on a Blu-ray player and you can look at code value 1 and code value 254 and know they're there. That's remarkably hard to get through the system.
Wow.
And so
wow.
As techniques and practices get better and a little more consolidated and people get used to building Blu-rays the way they do and people get used to the post-production workflows that take it from these massive 16-bit depth files all the way down to 8-bit and, you know, do no harm, or should I say do minimal harm.
Yeah, you can't avoid doing some, I think.
Absolutely. But you can remarkably well preserve the flesh tones, which are the most easily damaged by the color subsampling. Mm-hmm. I actually observed as recently as today that getting what they call extended dynamic range through the system works really, really well when you're really managing the process. And that's something that THX spends a lot of time and a lot of involvement in, is this post-production process. To make sure that what the consumers see in the consumer electronics side really works and is really what the director saw or the cinematographer saw. And that's one of the things, now it's the shameless self-promotion statement, that's one of the things we think that differentiates us from folks that lay claim to doing a lot of the same stuff we do. We really have people who work in our industry, the consumer electronics industry, who have post-production experience, myself being one of them. So we can walk into a post house and quickly and clearly identify the whole workflow that gets it to the point that it then becomes consumer electronics footage, equipment, whatever. And that's, and like I said, there's remarkably high number of places where you can do harm to an image. And part of our job is to make sure that it makes it all the way to the consumer with minimal damage, basically.
Right. Well, and that's always been one of the great things about THX that I've always appreciated, is that your intent ultimately is to preserve the content creator's image or vision as much as possible by the time it gets to the consumer. And I applaud THX for that effort in all these years that you've been doing it. I want to thank Kevin Wines for being a guest on the podcast. A really great conversation, Kevin. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott. It was a pleasure.
You can look at a bunch of stuff that THX is doing at thx.com. And you can also visit me at my online homes at ultimateavmag.com and hometheatermag.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv and follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Dan D'Agostino, founder of Krell and a legendary amplifier designer. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I sure hope you'll join me. Until then, geek out.